Hey everybody, How Did This Get Made is coming to Denver. That's right, we are going to be in Denver August 25th. Get your tickets starting this Monday pre-sale. That's right, for only the listeners of the show. We're giving out a special pre-sale code. You can find it on Twitter, Facebook, or if you signed up for our mailing list, we'll release it there as well. Please come out and see us in Denver, Colorado. We're so excited to be there. August 25th, Denver pre-sale starts Monday. Regular tickets go on sale 5-4. That's May 4th. See you later. Today's episode is brought to you by Squarespace. That's right, because here's the deal, people. A dream? Yeah, that's just a great idea that doesn't have a website. Whoa, did I just blow your fucking mind? Yeah, I did, okay? Because I'm telling you to make your dreams into reality. How? By making a website and make it a reality with Squarespace websites. All right, Squarespace makes it easy to turn your idea into a unique website. I've done it. Go to paulshear.com. You'll see it. It's easy, it's clean, and it's effortless. Okay, you got 24/7 award-winning customer support. You can customize everything from the look and the feel and the settings and the products. You can just use beautiful templates. You can be up and running within minutes, and there's nothing to install, patch, or upgrade ever. Plus, you don't have to pay some high-paid person to make something when you can do it at home and feel the accomplishment of that. So head to squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code BONKERS, that's B-O-N-K-E-R-S, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Today's episode is also brought to you by the Wind Down Podcast. What's the Wind Down Podcast? It is a podcast that takes away your fear of wine. Yes, I've been there. You've been there. What is a tannin? I don't know. But comedian Ben Schwartz is here. He's a self-proclaimed wine novice who teamed up with Wine Dialogues to create The Wine Down, okay? Wine like W-I-N-E, The Wine Down. It's a podcast that makes learning about wine fun. Each episode, Ben and a guest comedian sit down with a wine expert to ask all the questions that you have been too afraid to ask. It will make you enjoy your next glass of wine and make you feel just a little bit smarter. Listen along as they taste wine, share toasts, and crack jokes. It's all available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you choose to listen. The Wine Dialogues, it's a project of the William Hill Estate Winery. Y'all love Twilight? Well, guess what? We reversed it. That's right, sweeties. We saw beautiful creatures, oh, so no. You know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Could you be one that How Did This Get Made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, How Did This Get Made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made, an in-studio episode, old theme song, bringing it back.
Oh, yeah.
I am joined, as always, by Jason Manzoukas. How are you, Jason?
I'm good, Paul. It feels great to be in the old studio.
Oh, a studio episode, which means that we can get into some movies that are a little bit different than I think our flashier live episodes.
You would call those episodes, the movies we do in those episodes, flashy?
They were flashy.
You I think those are flashy movies. Rodney Dangerfield in Ladybugs is a flashy movie.
I'd call that a sexy movie, right?
Oh, see, I would call these movies sexy movies.
Yeah, they actually are. Well, we have a good movie to talk about today.
Ooh, do we ever?
June Diane Raphael is on assignment. That's what I'm going to say for her whenever she's not here.
I like
here.
That.
She's on assignment.
Yep.
And we have two special guests. She's fine.
For the podcast. On assignment for the podcast.
She is dealing with Rodney Dangerfield's estate.
She's embedded.
And she will get a handful of special reports. And you have to pay a lot of money for them. These are like premium episodes. Yep. They'll be coming down the pipe.
And guys, get on the message boards and start conjecturing what's actually going on, you know?
Let's debate it on the message boards. Well, we have two very special guests.
On the message boards, I'm sure there's a lot of like, finally, a studio episode.
But they don't have June.
Oh, classic. You fucks.
We have two amazing guests. Our first guest, you might know her from Wild Horses. She performs monthly at the UCB and Largo. Please welcome Erin Whitehead. How are you?
Hello.
Yeah.
It takes two women to fill one June shoes.
Oh, well, yep. You know what? One of you can be June and one of you can be a special guest. We don't know yet. We don't know.
Thunderdome.
And we have a very special guest, and I think this is a – we're excited to have you. You are – the Blacklist director of Communities.
I sure am.
And the Blacklist is this amazing list of unproduced screenplays that Franklin Leonard founded. He's been on our podcast. But what makes you even more interesting, and I'll introduce you in a second, is that you are...
Never introduced. Just a constant buildup with never a reveal.
Franklin says that you specialize in feminist horror films.
I sure do. Yeah, I do a series every October called Feminist Horror. So getting into this incredible piece of filmmaking, which is not a feminist horror film.
What? Are you sure?
We will get to the no spoilers.
Because I was terrified and felt very empowered as a woman.
Please welcome Kate Hagen.
Hey, guys.
We are so excited to have you both. All right, so for those of you who don't know, Beautiful Creatures, if you've not seen it, is exactly what, the way I described it, a kind of a reverse Twilight. It's one of those movies where they create a whole other type of thing. It's not really a vampire. It's not really a witch. It's a caster.
Yeah, but it's a witch.
It's a witch.
And you really had that Southern VO down when you started it.
My Southern VO, I mean, when you, that was the thing that grabbed me right away.
It was immediate. So bad. Like
it's intense.
It was intense and it started so deep where I was like, oh, is this a period piece?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, in the Civil War,
yeah.
You know, Mama always said, you join up or you get out of town. And then he's like, but then again, it's junior year, so I guess that's expected. And I was like, oh.
just to get a sampling of it, this is a young Han Solo here.
That's right.
Lead.
This is young Han Solo.
Yeah.
By the way, this made me very concerned for the young Han Solo.
I want to know who saw this and was like, that's our guy. That's Han Solo.
Boom, we got this.
Whoa,
as a matter of fact, Alden Ehrenreich, or I don't know how you pronounce his
Ehrenreich,
name.
Ehrenreich, I think.
Ehrenreich. He was brought in like a week before production. Started because
of this movie
because their original actor had dropped out.
Do we think he dropped out realizing like, oh no, this is trash?
He might have been like, oh yeah, not gonna do this.
Did the original actor come in, see the set that is the Beetlejuice house inside this, and be like, you know what? I'm out.
Check, please. It was Jack O'Connell. I don't know O'Connell.
He was in
the Angelina Jolie movie.
The
inspirational one. Very
yes.
helpful.
Oh, okay.
The World War II.
Yes,
right?
I know that one. Invincible or not Invincible. But,
no.
But
let's call it Invincible, though.
It's the one where the person looks like they're hanging on a bar.
Invincible.
Here we go. This is a little bit of the VO, this deep fried, southern deep fried voice.
It's been the same dream every night for months now. I can't ever see her face, but I know her. Like I've known her all my life.
2013 movie. That's where we're starting with that kind of VO. And the Southern accents keep on coming.
They are not great.
No, and they don't cast Southerners in this movie.
No, that's not the thing. Jeremy Irons is something between his teeth and the Southern accent are insane.
I always feel bad for him because I feel like he's low rent Alan Rickman. I feel like everyone, anytime he's in anything, I'm like,
oh,
but
that's
we
wish
it were Alan Rickman.
I know
right?
what you mean. That is like, you definitely like put people together and that's a good one. Those are two guys that I get what you mean. Boy, do I love Alan Rickman.
Amazing.
Alan Rickman.
But by the way, I still feel when I see Jeremy Irons, I'm not like upset because I still think he can bring it.
He's a terrific actor.
He could bring it. Did he bring it?
I don't know if he
brought it. He did his best, man. He really tried. He brought something.
I do not think he brought it.
No, I think, look, so this movie has an amazing cast. It's like Jeremy Irons, Emma Thompson, Viola Davis, Margot Martindale,
Emma Thompson shows up like 40 minutes in and is doing the Lord's work in this movie. Emma Thompson is so good in this movie, playing both the puritanical town kind of shame monger and then also the kind of embodiment of the kind of the bad caster, Seraphim.
Yes.
She is like doing it's great. I'm like, I know she's married, but I would like to use the platform of this podcast to ask Emma Thompson to marry me.
It is Emma Thompson as you've never seen her. Like, her take joy in being terrible. I guess I've never seen you play that role.
Yeah.
You're always the lovable one.
Yes.
Well, I actually felt like the scene between her and Jeremy Irons, she lifted Jeremy Irons up in that scene. I feel like when they're in that, in this world, like, you can be in the real world and then almost have a shadow world. So they basically have this big fight scene in a shadow world while they're also in a real world. I mean, this movie should be taking place.
The general setup of the movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I have exposition that walks you through it, but I think we can, let's all try to put it together here.
So we know we're in a town, right, where the Civil War played a big part in its history.
Yes. Exactly.
That's the backdrop.
As told by us is the ghost holograms in the very beginning of the movie.
Yes.
I knew we were in for a treat when we started with that.
Yeah. By the way, the flashbacks in this are oddly like holograms. They are. It's a bizarre, I mean, artistic.
I guess they're supposed to be ghosts, but
they look like a
terrible
natural history museum thing that you would go see.
Yeah. It's, because it's also like, they are almost like apparitions, like they're still there. They exist in this world, and it's a fictional battle, I believe. It's the battle of
Honey Hill.
And you know, where all the really honey is up on that hill.
It was a battle between a bear and a bee.
The original Winnie the Pooh.
You guys didn't have Civil War reenactments as part of your high school requirements?
Like, oh, yeah.
I don't know.
In suburban Boston, somehow I did not.
They really did. I will say they set it up, though, because that line at the beginning I came back to when they were like, they keep on reenacting the Civil War as if it's going to turn out different. And it did. Spoiler, it
that
does.
That is foreshadowing. By the way, I did have an issue with some of the Civil War reenactment when they finally get to that scene. Like, in my mind, and maybe this is where I'm wrong, I thought like Civil War reenactments were done in a way where it's like, we're going to do this, and then you're going to die, you'll go over here. And it seems like this is more of a paintball Civil War reenactment. It's like, you go guard the house, and then this other kid's up there, and they're like, they're just both walking around with guns, like, man, you want to kill each other? Sure.
Yeah, like, it really was anybody's game. Like, they don't know who's going to win at the end of each one of these.
I would love to know what school.
They're doing it wrong.
Yeah. What school district is like, let's give these children rifles.
Honey Hill.
Yes. Yeah. But not racy books.
Ugh,
like, this is also a movie where it's like, it seems, piggyback on what you guys were saying, it feels like a period piece, not just because of the kind of drawly, like, insane Southern accents, but also like the idea that like we are living in the present day and there's still like completely banned books.
Right. I googled it and To Kill a Mockingbird was like brought up to be banned like 2 years ago, but it just it didn't really work.
Oh, then maybe I'm being naive.
No, I kind of was like, is that still a thing? But it
made such a thing of it that I was like, oh, this will be like Footloose where we really the town changes, and then they were like, anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, it also is a bizarre thing because this movie is symbolism for dummies. It's like they're reading To Kill a Mockingbird and they talk about Boo Radley, and then he sees Jeremy Irons in the house. He's like, he's like Boo Radley. It's like, you see what we just did? We read it. We saw it. We're seeing it.
Can I ask a question? When young Han Solo goes to the house for the first time.
Yes.
And the door opens and he walks in and he sees feet behind the door.
Yeah.
Is that Jeremy Irons?
I believe it is.
Who's hiding behind the door in that moment?
I think it was because we didn't see
anything
else, right?
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I just was wondering.
But the feet, it confused me. It was definitely like a throw to Kill a Mockingbird, the movie, because that's like, I think, the way that you see Boo Radley in that movie. But it makes no sense for his character because character is like a real, like,
commanding presence.
Yeah. Like, he wouldn't be hiding.
No, he's not.
Like,
and that confused me. I was like, I kept being like, oh, when are we going to meet the person from behind the door? And we never did. And I was like, I guess it was Jeremy Irons.
They had a rough time settling on tone. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh, just the next scene, it's like, it becomes his kind of island of Dr. Moreau, is how I felt. It's like, here I am at my baby grand piano, just playing with my terrible Southern accent, ?
Yeah. Well, just get a taste. Well, we'll hear everyone's Southern accent. This is Jeremy Irons playing piano and talking.
You put me on probation until the window thing gets investigated.
That's crazy. That was not your fault.
Voice of reason in a town of buttermilk mine.
What?
Lee and I could get to like this friend of yours.
I mean, it's like blaming you for the lightning on Honey Hill.
Oh, yes, I heard about the lightning. In fact, a similar occurrence took place in Venezuela for many years at Lake Maracaibo.
All right, so then you get a little taste.
He's basically doing Foghorn Leghorn.
I'm telling you, Alan Rickman could have saved this movie.
I mean, by the way, why cast a Southern person? No, I think, yes, I get it. Like, these British actors
are... Oh, the leads
are
all British. The main girl is Australian.
Yeah.
It is so... Can I ask you...
Well, we didn't even... Yeah, we didn't even get to the plot.
Is this a book?
Yes.
It's
four books.
I have been told that the books are more interesting.
I doubt it.
But I'm not convinced. I also don't understand why it's not our lead... What is her name? Lena? Alice Englert? Why it's not her story. I'm like, I don't care about this, like, Southern fried fuckboy, like, quoting Bukowski and, like, here's my copy of Tropic of Cancer.
I was confused by that as well, because I get, like, reverse Twilight. But does that mean that it's, like, for the boys? Was this like Twilight for boys?
I think it's just showing like a
because it empowered, seems like a very kind of teen romancy, soapy kind of like.
I think they were just like, wouldn't it be interesting instead of like,
yeah,
like I think if she had all
if the
power,
girl had the power,
yeah, because this literally was greenlit right when Twilight became a success and they were like kind of raiding the YA market. They're like, what do we got? What do we got?
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get it into production as quick as possible. And so basically, it's about a witch. She's going to turn 16, and she believes that when she turns 16, she's going to take on, you can become a light witch or dark witch, and she'll, or caster, and she is.
Which is like, literally like Wizard of Oz level shit.
Yeah.
And there's a seemingly random, although they do explain it, rule where male casters, if they turn dark, can just choose to not be, but female casters don't get to choose.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a man's world. It is a man's world.
Because her bloodline is cursed by the Civil War thing that happened.
We do find out that a hologram fucked her over, and that's
so bad. That ghost hologram just ruining everything.
There is a weird thing with this movie because, again, it's almost like they just take a couple things out of context. Like, it's a, you know, Southern fried fuckboy. I'm going to keep on saying that. Like, he is
SFFB.
He's in class, and then the girl comes in. And she's like, she's new in town. But she's not new in town because Jeremy Irons is her father, but he owns
the town. No, he's her uncle.
Or uncle. But he owns the town, and they own, like, a crazy mansion. Like, it's just a bizarre thing. It's a weird way to be like, they're so embedded in this town, but yet, like, in a weird way, I feel like the boys should have come into town instead of her. Like, it was a weird thing. Like, everyone knew of her, but she wasn't there. She never went to school.
There's a way in which, like, I almost feel like all of the obvious moves were taken
right
by Twilight. Like, the story structure should have been Twilight's, you know, in setup, but it would have been even more boldly accused of ripping off that story, I feel like. So they had to, like, try and obfuscate it in various ways, which made it only confusing.
It's very funny to me that with four books, they were like, let's just do one movie.
Yeah.
I
assume
like,
they thought they would
do
more.
No faith in the franchise. Did they finish
the
series?
Failed. I think this is a failed franchise.
This is
it was going to be a franchise. That was
especially with the ending, you're like, oh, we're going to set up for like further adventures of Ethan and Lena.
I can't wait to get to the ending, by the way.
I would argue that this movie, the one thing it lacks is like a driving plot. Like the story of it is not incredibly compelling.
No.
The most part, you're kept in the dark of the story for at least an hour.
And the action takes place in reading in a library.
Yes.
Like 45 minutes
slow
of her
montages of reading.
In a secret library. And then
That is under their small southern town and is explained to be like the capital of casters.
Right.
Like Viola Davis is basically and her thing is like when they find the tunnels underground. It's like they wait to reveal stuff for so long. Like Emma Thompson, Margot Martindale, all these people don't arrive until after the first 45 minutes to an hour.
Yeah.
And then the further reveal of the hidden library and all that stuff comes like 40 minutes later, practically.
Yeah, this is like a 2-hour movie where really, if you just sped up the first hour and 40 minutes, I think I'd be more into it. I'd be like, all right, I get what's going on.
Oh, yeah. Jump in.
They set up the worst. They set him up so badly, too. Like, I felt so bad for his ex-girlfriend who comes over and she's like,
oh,
you said you needed the summer and then you didn't call. And he's like, yep.
Yep.
And she's like, okay, well, anyway, let's
go to the movies.
And he's like, sure, I guess we could do that. And we're supposed to hate her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's supposed to be the bad girl.
What?
Yeah. But then she goes nuts instantaneously. Like, she goes from being like a girl who's just pining for her old boyfriend to like literally, I feel like, this is the closest I've come to like Bible thumping. They're like, I won't be in here. My Catholic religion doesn't allow me to be near
like,
pastors.
They're like praying aloud in school, in English class for their souls, you know, in a way that is. And I get it. Like, I guess, like, the juxtaposition is meant to be those who are religious versus, like, the agents of darkness, the casters or whatever.
But then they drop that, too.
But that's not the central conceit. That's not the struggle that's at play. You know, religious versus the casters. That's not it. So it's just, like, ancillary kind of, look at these, like, these terrible girls and their terrible mothers, you know?
I would have liked to have seen a lot more of Zoe Deutsch, just like teen evangelist, just devouring scenery, just tearing up these scenes.
By the way, everyone is working very hard on bringing this movie up a level. I feel like they're, everyone is, I mean, by the way, Emmy Rossum comes in.
And then disappears.
Disappears. Yeah, I was
And excited. She's great.
She's great. Like, she comes in as like the bad girl vampire can control men's minds.
She's not a vampire.
Oh, sorry. Caster. I get there are two things about this movie. Like, there was a period of time where I feel like every movie poster had like young teens surrounded by vines.
Yes.
Some sort of vine, like vines were growing. And then this, it's like, we're not vampires. We're the alighted. And we're not, yeah, just that dumb thing of like, it's not what you know. We're not Frankensteins. We're, you know, we're the corrupted. And it's like,
oh yeah.
There was a guy like that in my high school. There was this guy. He came and he was new, and he wore a fucking cape. And when I was trying
what?
To, and I was trying
what?
To,
wait, what age?
9th, 10th grade, and he wore these white contact lenses and a cape. And I was trying to be nice, and I was like, hey, nice cape. And he goes, it's not a cape, it's a cloak.
Wow.
But he too was like, it's not what you think. I have different vines growing outside my house.
I bet he saw this and loved it.
I bet he loved it.
He was like, this is all I needed. Why didn't this exist when I was in high school wearing a cloak?
Now he has like kids.
Oh yeah.
That's the most embarrassing thing, to like show pictures of your kids, like your kids, like you picture yourself like, yeah, it was my cloak phase.
Like my cloak and white contacts. Can you imagine how crazy that would appear to be like, oh, I want to look at pictures of dad when he was a kid, when he was my age. Here you go. Just white eyes and a cloak.
The worst would be like if unfortunately, not wishing any ill on this man, but if he did pass away and then that's the only way. If that's the only way that your kid can like look back, like, oh, what was my dad like? And then there's no real answer for these, like this big 4 years. Like, oh, geez, what?
And imagine the hope though. Your kid would be like, so dad might be walking among us.
He figured out a way to go through the other side.
He could become a ghost hologram.
This movie also does a great job of coming up with terms that don't exist.
Sure.
Well, first of all, the school teacher who has an eye patch. Great
Why?
Choice. No reason. I thought he was going to be part of the whole thing.
Same.
Like that guy from Harry Potter who has the eye patch. Moody, right?
Oh, yeah, Mad-Eye Moody, of course.
But this actor always has an eye thing.
Pruitt Taylor Vince, I think he has like a lazy eye or something. Okay. And in some movies, it's just
and
as
sometimes
is.
Sometimes he shakes it.
Yeah, and like, they're like, eye patch, I guess, for this one.
Oof.
Well, yeah.
He said a line and he goes, that hat will look good on my cat. And I didn't understand what that even meant. I was like, is that a thing? Is that a phrase? Like, that hat will look good on my cat? I don't know.
I missed that line.
But yeah, because I guess they're talking in class. It also does a great thing where, like, there's a little, like, whisper. Hey, what's going on? And then the girl starts talking, and there's, like, three-way conversation. And the class is completely silent. And then someone says something else, and the teacher's like, all right, calm down. Like, as if he's been waiting for that long. I don't know why it made me laugh.
Well, there's a lot of stuff that is in this movie not for the people in the scene, but like in the Emmy Rossum scene where she's driving into town in her red car. Okay, so she's driving into town. This is her character's introduction. We've not seen her yet before. She's driving super fast. So police, of course, Dukes of Hazzard style, pull out from behind a billboard and are like, woo, woo, woo. And that's how police are.
I love it.
Okay, so then there's a shot in Emmy Rossum's car where we see her turn her rear view mirror, not so that she can see the police car behind us, so that the camera in the back seat can see behind
them. That was the fucking
weirdest. I was like, she would never move her mirror.
Because if we can see it, she can't.
She turns her mirror in a way that is fundamentally not useful for her as a driver.
I couldn't believe they allowed for that. Like, I couldn't even believe that she didn't go, guys, really. I mean, if I do this, I can't see the cop.
This
car.
Is
why
just
would
for
I,
you.
Yeah.
It calls attention to the camera.
She also did not object to the weird pixie cut wig that I was just obsessed with. The, like, very short hair that you're like, where did you get this wig?
I didn't know it was Emmy Rossum until I was like, oh, I think, oh, okay, yeah, like she was a little bit more hidden than I pictured her to be. But in that car scene, what I love is, so the cop is chasing her. And then the cop who is driving just kind of lifts up his head, like as if something is going on.
Well, she's like cursing him. His eyes go all red and bloodshot.
Okay.
And he has like,
yeah,
like,
his
like
face his, like melted.
His face basically.
Oh, and all right.
She kills him.
Oh, he's dead?
Oh, yeah.
Dead.
She kills that cop.
God, he just crashed.
You are still on that hat cat line.
Yeah. I was like, God.
You're, like, you're still like, ooh, Emmy Rossum. She must be good. No, she's a bad guy.
But again, I was like, why is this movie not about her? I would love to watch a movie about this woman because she's, what do they say?
Episode
she's a
two.
Siren.
Well, and she had the biggest turn. The fact that she was like, just had a normal life as a teen and didn't want to go dark. And then I'm like, that's the better story.
Oh, yeah. Like, her as a runaway trying to get away. And then like, and then she like turns. By the way, all of the stuff like, this is when we see someone get chosen. Is that what it is or whatever?
Yes.
You know, it's her birthday or whatever, and she's running away. And then the moon comes out.
The claiming.
Thank you. The moon comes out. She looks up at the moon dramatically and then is like all of a sudden a different person. She's like super horny and like immediately kills a dude. And I was like, this is what it is? This is like, it's just look at the moon and now you're like, there.
But meanwhile, the other girl had a ceremony.
Yes.
Like, which seemed like a, like where they all got on a giant chessboard in the Beetlejuice house. And
the Beetlejuice house.
Modern minimalist haunted house.
Yeah.
My, like bargain basement Beetlejuice.
My biggest issue in this movie was a young Han Solo who comes. Okay, that house from the outside looks abandoned, dilapidated, unkept. You walk inside and it is
immaculate,
shiny, beautiful. He never
and
does
like
a double
modern,
take.
A modern structure. There are no supporting columns or anything there. This is an enormous house and it is just one wide open space.
And
you know, it's structurally impossible.
And he never does a double take. This kid never goes like, huh? Like he seemingly does not react. Support for today's show comes from Squarespace. Think it, dream it, make it with Squarespace. I want someone to turn that into a rap song, an Eminem-style rap song. Think it, dream it, make it with Squarespace. What do I need to tell you about? I've been talking, you've been listening to this podcast for a long time, right? You know that when I say there's one place to go for websites, that is Squarespace, okay? We're talking beautiful templates created by world-class designers. Easy. Ease of use. I've created multiple websites. June has created multiple websites using the simple platform, right? They got great templates. You just pop, 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 pop. That's what it's, you don't pop, 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 but that's what it feels like. It feels like you're making music. You're in it. You're living it. You are a web designer. No longer are you at the whim of some person who's charging you $100 an hour to make you a site that is outdated in a week. Okay. Squarespace is there. And you know what? They care about you. They got 24/7 customer service. Plus they got analytics that's going to help you grow in real time. You can do everything you want. You got a restaurant. Great. You got a t-shirt store. Great. You want to put a blog? Great. Whatever your dream is, they're going to make it a reality, okay? Get online. It's the only place to be. You saw Ready Player One. You know how this ends. You got to get online. Head to squarespace.com/bonkers for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code BONKERS, B-O-N-K-E-R-S, to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/bonkers. Offer code BONKERS.
Did the Coen brothers see Beautiful Creatures, know how bad his accent was, and then were like, we've got to have him do that would that it were so simple scene.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, it's so funny because he plays like a cowboy in that too.
I was like, one of the Coen brothers saw this.
Can I ask a question?
Hilarious.
Yeah.
Is this his real accent?
It can't be.
No.
Well, because both Hail Caesar and this movie have very dense Southern accents.
Imagine being such a subpar white man that people were like, that's so great. We need more of
I would love it if subpar white man took off as like an acronym.
I have to tell you.
Just a total subpar white man, total spam. No, swim. That doesn't work that way. But yeah, go ahead.
In our office, we have a term for all of these guys because I kept calling him Ansel Elgort. I was like, oh yeah, that movie with Ansel Elgort. And I was like, nope, it's the other one. It's Alden Ehrenreich. We call them Mikey Shenanigans. All of these kind of like interchangeable white guy actors. It's just like, he's a real Mikey Shenanigans.
Well, I, the other day I was having drinks with a friend and we had just gone to see.
We get it, Aaron. You got
five friends. Jesus. I don't know. We were out. Whatever. It was a night.
By the way, born in Los Angeles. Angeles, California.
Whoa!
And he is 28 years old.
He's got his gotta have parents in the industry.
He is the only child of an interior designer.
Lie.
And an accountant.
Lie.
And his stepfather is an orthodontist.
Oh boy!
What's his family?
He's Jewish. And his ancestors are Jewish immigrants from Austria, Hungary, Russia, and Poland.
That's the picture that he's using?
I don't think you can pick your Wikipedia page.
That's an interesting
And he went to the Palisades Elementary School. So, yeah, he is as white.
LA
and, yeah, he is L.A.
He's from the Palisades,
anyway,
bro.
Back to how I once had drinks with friends.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
But we had just seen A Wrinkle in Time, and she was like, yeah, I mean, I'll see any movie with Chris, and she didn't say Chris Pine. She said the name of the guy from
Evans,
Chris Pratt.
Pratt.
Okay.
And I go. Well, those are. I go. That's a different guy. And she goes, no, this is the guy from the same guy as in Jurassic Park. And she like,
whoa. Yeah.
But I was like, I would always mess up those two, and I don't consider them subpar, to be clear.
No,
but
sure.
I do consider them.
But they're like the face
interchangeable.
Yeah. Like, do you remember that time like when they were trying to find the next Chris Pratt, and they try like all these people, like the guy who was in like Tron Uprising. It's just like this look. It's sort of like, and even the guy who played Captain America now, who like
Chris Evans,
they like tried him until it clicked. You know, it's like there's a lot of like guys that just are very good looking, serviceable guys until they find this thing.
This is a very Hollywood thing, though, is to really Hollywood always needs those new young leads, you know, and they're always going to try and figure out. I feel like they're in this is an interesting movie. I don't know the woman who's playing Lena. But I feel like Zoe Deutsch has been in a ton of stuff in different capacities.
Okay, wait, which one is Zoe Deutsch?
She's Emily. She's the friend.
She's the, like, teen evangelist, like, Bible thumper, like, I'm screaming about praying in the classroom.
The ex-girlfriend, yes, exactly, who wants to go to the movies with him.
Put it in terms of a male, so I understand who she is.
But they've put her in tons of stuff, and I feel like and I full disclosure, I was in a fantastic movie with her called Dirty Grandpa that was...
Were you Grandpa?
I was the dirtiest of grandpas. But I feel like she's one of these people who is, like, they are really kind of... like working to make her a movie star in one way or another, you know?
Well, and I think when you're that young too, you do take these opportunities because you can go above them. Like you can kind of pop out of them. You can make like a crappy teen movie
or you make
Hunger Games.
I 100% understand why she was in this. I don't understand why, first of all, and I might be wrong about this because I didn't Google it. Was Evan Rachel Wood the hologram, or was it the girl Mrs. Maisel?
Let me see.
Either of them?
I think it was. Wasn't it the girl? Wasn't it Lena?
It wasn't.
Oh. It was. I have all their names. You want to take a look? This is the cast.
Who was the hologram?
Oh, by the way, you're gonna get your mind blown. I keep on looking at Alden's Wikipedia page, and this is how he was discovered. He was discovered at a friend's bat mitzvah by Steven Spielberg, who watched a comedy video created by him and a friend.
What?
Which began in the present and eventually cut to 30 years later with Mr. Enreich in a kimono screaming to stop a wedding. Alden describes a comedic performance he gave in the movie, as I ran around in a skinny punk trying on girls' clothes and eating dirt. And then he was contracted by DreamWorks, which Spielberg helped found, and met with his casting director. So that's how he did it. He made a sketch for some kids' bat mitzvah. Spielberg
saw it. That's amazing.
And that was it.
Is Spielberg just like making calls? Like, is he making the Han Solo car being like, you got to cast a guy? I love that video.
I mean,
he says
Spielberg is even on record and goes, I saw him in a bat mitzvah video that my daughter did with him. And, I loved it.
That, to me, is one of those, like, these big famous directors or movie stars, they're just like us.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm at home most nights watching bar and bat mitzvah videos, you know, just checking in on what teen Jews are up to.
Making their comedy shorts.
It is interesting, though, because I feel like Zoe Deutsch, like Brie Larson, Jennifer Lawrence, these actors are all very distinctive, but all of their male counterpoints are so dull.
So bland.
So boring. Yeah.
So bland. Yeah, until you get a Timothy Chalamet, who is like transcendent. He was not in this movie. Oh. He was in Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
He was the young.
God.
Yeah. Yes.
He fucking checked me out the other day in Larchmont, and I wanted to die. I thought I was his mom, but like I was so I turned red. I was so cold, and I was suddenly so fucking hot. I was waiting in a crosswalk in my car, and then he crossed it, and he like made eye contact with me the entire fucking time he walked across, and I was like, child, I will die.
Oh yeah. I was standing in this, a party
this
with
this man. This man or this boy, man. People, women, want him more than anyone.
I was at a party.
Oh my fucking God! I was but at a because he slept with a man in a movie. That's why we want him. Yeah. Like he's saying.
Yeah, you can turn him.
He's got the like 90s.
I just want to see him with a guy.
Oh yeah.
The like 90s, like I'm a floppy haired boy who smokes cigarettes and read Howard Zinn. Like, what's up, girls?
He definitely had that in Lady Bird.
Yeah,
but I will say no thanks to that guy.
You don't want that guy. You want the guy.
I was way more into the Lady Bird guy, which is terrible and like explains my dating history. But you know, it's fine.
Were you at a party with him, Jason?
Oh, I was at a party talking to people, and he came up and started talking to our group of people.
Yeah,
and. It was like a maybe 1 minute, perfectly like jovial conversation. And when he walked away first by being like, okay, I got to go find my mom, which was adorable.
But then
I saw him walk out with Aaron. When he walked away, all of the girls in the group I was with like melted into puddles on the ground.
That is amazing.
I mean, and he is, I hate it because I feel like I heard men describe Alicia Silverstone this way in the 90s where they were like, she's so gorgeous and yet she's so, like, she has baby fat. She's a child. And that's how I feel about him. I'm like, he's kind of my son or my lover. Yeah. I don't know.
My super hot son.
Yeah. Or my son's a super hot friend.
But I think you're right. Like, I think when these guys pop, then they get everything, too. It's like, then you get your Chris Pratt. And I think Chris Pine is, like, an awesome actor, too. Like, I've seen him on stage, and he's just fantastic. He's great.
Chris Pratt or Chris Pine, who would you prefer?
Who would I prefer? It depends on the work, I guess, really. I mean,
In terms of romance or in terms of in a movie?
No, in a movie. Like, okay, Jurassic Park, would you have preferred Chris Pine?
Oh, no. Chris Pratt.
Got it.
Because in Wonder Woman, you're like, he's the exact right dude for that.
Yeah.
Like, he's the exact right dude for the dad in Wrinkle in Time. Okay.
Well, what's interesting is all of these like white guys of this generation, like we're talking about all the Chris's, you know, all of that crew. What we're now seeing is like a new generation of kind of bland white dudes, mm-hmm. you know, and it's these guys. But this is what I will ask is, are they only a generation of non-distinct white dudes to us? Like are
all right.
girls in their 20s, can they tell you all the differences between all of these Alden, Aaron Wright, and all of these people, are these guys their generation of heartthrobs?
Of like Christian Slater,
where
I'm like, you can confuse Christian Slater with whoever else I was in love with that year.
Who
was
C. Thomas Howell? No, that doesn't work.
I don't even know who
that's
is.
Too old.
I know Soul people man. Go nuts for Chalamet. Like, I know there's a huge just like Twitter fandom for him.
I don't think that, no, because I don't think these guys have caught on yet. I think it's like they're throwing things at the wall to be like, does this catch?
Or like Robert Pattinson, obviously, was like a huge heartthrob off
special.
Of.
He's special.
Yeah.
He's terrific.
And he was in Harry Potter,
too. Oh, Cedric Diggory. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Cedric.
And by the way,
always.
I thought he was great in that movie, Good Time. Good Time, great movie.
Yeah. Honestly,
he's a good actor.
The only reason that I can even consider Hufflepuff a viable house is because Cedric Diggory
had to have been wrongly placed. They sort too early.
The sorting hat had to have been wrong. Cedric Diggory is no way a Hufflepuff. Come on.
People have said that Hermione should not have been...
She should be Ravenclaw.
That's what everyone said. But then I was like, but she's really brave. I wouldn't want to be a Ravenclaw. I just want to be famous. I would just want to be Slytherin or...
You want to get in
really?
That... Oh, I took it online. I was a Slytherin.
But you know how you can work it.
Yeah, I know.
Like, let me guess. Yeah.
But then once you get it, then you can't change it on the website. Then you're locked in. The Pottermore.
The real test.
Oh, yes.
By the way, there's things like...
I would rather take my... know what my house is in Harry Potter than what my IQ is. In terms of online tests.
Or like
to take.
Myers-Briggs. Who needs it? Yeah.
No, I got to know where I got to go. And by the way,
I want to know what my Patronus is.
My love language, my Ayurvedic dosha. Language.
By the way, I'm obsessed with the love language whole thing.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, we all have love languages that we the way we show love to others and how we prefer to have love shown to us.
Oh, yes. Interesting.
So like gift giving or words.
Oh, yes, I do. Somebody was telling me about this. Yeah.
There's another one that I just heard. There was like an interview with like a sexologist on a podcast I was listening to. And she said there's that for like intimacy as well. Like there's some people who need this before that.
Ooh, and what test is that?
It was like fascinating.
Guys, welcome to Taking Tests with the How Did This Get Made crew.
I would listen to that podcast all day long.
Yes, I would love to take these tests. The one thing that also I want to talk about before we get too far away from the movie is when I watch movies like this, I'm like, I'm struggling to get through it on a certain level, right? I'm just like, all right, it's 2 hours, I'm here. But I start to look at different things. And one of the things I like to look at is how uncomfortable it must have been for certain actors on certain days. And there's one scene where young Han Solo is like in the rain in a denim jacket.
Yeah.
And it's like three layers. I'm like, oh, that must have been miserable because every take, he's going to like take that off or like do a thing because he's
and they've
got to
dry him down. Yep.
And I was like, the scene with where she generates the rain cloud and then they fuck in the car, which also the fact that he's like clearly like 20 years old and she's supposed to be 15.
Yeah.
You're like, what are we doing?
Well, she's supposed to be 15, but so is he.
Yeah, but he does not look 15. Like she, I'm like, okay.
No, he's going to college.
No, he's a junior.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's a junior.
Okay.
Right? They're going on a college tour.
Oh, right. Okay.
But also, I
know what you mean, but they are meant to both be teenagers.
They needed to cast somebody younger looking.
But Kate,
for him.
So my question to you is, and I feel like the thing that this movie also breaks is like, isn't it like sex often forbidden in these movies?
Yeah.
So they do it, and there's seemingly.
But do they have sex?
I don't. They because then they refer to making out. So I was like, not totally.
I don't know.
Sure.
Okay.
It's that weird, like PG-13, like oh, we're gonna get hot and heavy in a backseat, and we're gonna cut away, so nobody really knows.
Yeah. But that, and what
they
was
had sex if you wanted them to have sex.
What's interesting about this movie, I feel like, is it is in every category, it walks right up to the point where it could be much more descriptive or much more specific about what's going on, and then it becomes very vague instead. So instead, like, we get so few instances of casters using their powers. Mm-hmm. We hear them talk about what it is a lot, but we very rarely see them do stuff beyond making it rain on him or making some vines move.
And like blowing out the windows in a school room.
Very little is understood versus like the vampires. Like the vampires in the Twilight series, we understand, you know, what they're all about.
The world has to have rules.
Yes. And then so much so that we can even understand in those movies or those books the vampires and the werewolf people, and that their struggle is this whole thing.
And we get their whole history.
Yeah.
I know. I people make fun of Twilight, but I think it was actually pretty well done. I didn't read the books, but
no, I think it's like it's perfect for what it is.
Yeah.
And but here, this is a movie that like the rules are there, but we're only giving you the ones that you need to know. And then even when they get to the room where there's like, here's a secret book, and the riddle will reveal itself to you. There's math problems.
There was math.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this is a witch text.
What is, where, why are they like,
and
why are there parabolas in here?
Witch text, like, GED, just one and the same, make it easy for everybody.
But then the reveal is, you just have to have someone you love die, and then the spell is broken.
Yeah.
Like, that,
and
why
that took so long. Why can't that be part of the curse forever? Why does she have to find that information? What does it help? Why does it help us to have,
and it's not complicated. It's the simplest thing.
It was like, did you guys see that movie Penelope with Christina Ricci?
No.
It's a very underrated but I think
it's a biopic about Penelope Cruz.
It's a Pig-Nose
biopic
movie?
About Penelope Cruz, but Christina Ricci plays her.
Perfect casting.
Does she have a pig nose?
Yes, it's a girl who has a curse, who has a pig nose, and you know from the very start how she can break it. And they're just trying to get this. And of course, by the end, it's like they misunderstood the deeper ramifications of how you actually break this curse. But you don't need to spend the whole movie trying to read about how it happened. Like, that's not the interesting part.
But it feels haphazard. It feels like they were, like, getting to that point in the movie. I'm like, what are we going to do? And they were like, what if we did, like, a Buffy the Vampire Slayer style Giles the Watcher? Now there's, a Watcher with a library of books.
And Viola
and the answer's
Davis.
In the book.
Viola
Davis.
All these great
so
people.
First person attached to this movie, Viola Davis. And why?
How do you know that?
Because it said it in my show notes.
If the movie came out in 2013, she probably attaches in 2011.
Yeah, there's nothing
she's still
there.
Taking a lot of
But is that after the help?
No.
When is The Help? 2012?
Is it?
I think it was right after The Help.
Oh, okay. So but I will say, I can understand the Emma Thompsons, the Jeremy Irons. I can understand all of the Viola Davis even. These people, because to them, I bet it was minimal work, and the potential was maybe this is going to be Twilight.
Yeah. And by the
way,
maybe
it's going to be a series of very lucrative, like,
but they read
teen,
the script.
But I guess, I know. But there may be a thought of, and I'm in the belief that I love the Hunger Games books. I did not like the first Hunger Games movie.
I didn't read the books, but I did see the movies.
The second movie was great. I think there's a thing like the first one is going to be a little bit like we're finding our ground, and then they'll get better. Even Harry Potter, to a certain degree.
Hang on. Careful.
Well, you would agree with that.
Columbus movies are not good.
Yeah.
But they're also kids movies for kids. Like,
right.
It's about the 11-year-old Harry and the 12-year-old Harry, and those are meant to be.
Are you also a huge Harry Potter fan?
I don't know what you mean. I am like an enormously huge Harry Potter fan.
I've read the, yeah.
Okay. I am currently in the middle of re-listening to all of the audiobooks.
Which I have to do because you say they're so good.
The audiobooks are fire. Amazing. I reread the series every year and I pretend I'm Harry to go to sleep at night because it's the only way I can
I listen to the audiobooks at night to go to sleep.
Yeah.
Because it's like Jim Dale telling me a story to go to sleep.
Have you guys gone to Hogwarts, like the one in Florida? It is
worth it. I wouldn't have it here, but it's not real.
The one in Florida will blow your mind.
I can't. Universal put its little stamp on everything. And you look in the windows and it's fake.
No. When you go to Orlando.
Aaron, hang on. It is fake.
And there's muggles everywhere. By the way, if a test is real, you should come out a muggle. That's
yes.
Because I'm not a fucking witch and I know I'm not nice.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Are you okay? Sorry to cry. I'm
weeping.
So sorry to cry.
You are openly weeping.
In Orlando, you can go into, like, shops, and they have specially branded merchandise that you can't buy anywhere else that is from the actual shop. It's, like, fully packaged.
And it doesn't say Universal on
No.
it? See, that, why don't they just do that here? Universal is the shittiest. Like, this is my fear with the Star Wars land at Disneyland, is that it's going to be.
No, they're doing that the same thing.
That's what I was hoping they would do, because I feel like Disney does everything better. Like, Universal
Disney
is, like,
said that
disjointed.
They're not selling toys. Like, you can't buy, like, like, if you were to buy, like, an AT-AT or something at the new Star Wars Galaxy Edge thing, you would only buy what they would be able to make in the Star Wars universe. So, like, if it's a stuffed animal, it's going to look like the one from Rogue One that was on the ground.
Interesting.
It's literally a taxidermied
animal. Like, so they're going to make, like, shitty-looking toys. So you could never buy, like, a Galaxy Edge T-shirt in that part of the park. You have to go to another part of the park to get it. So you can only, like, because Han Solo would never wear a T-shirt.
I love that.
This makes me feel much better. And I hope they have a real cocktail bar. Because, again, Universal really blew it.
Well, Aaron, because Aaron's like, because I want to get wasted.
You can drink it in Harry Potter.
Yeah, at Honey Dukes, and it's fake. It's like, here, you're going to have one of our normal beers.
I guess I just said Fireball Whiskey. But it was good.
Which is just Fireball Whiskey. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's going to be
like a butterbeer is Galaxy's like edge. Not alcoholic, right?
Right.
Why aren't they doing boozy
butterbeer? No,
butter
but
beer?
They had that's a little like a real there was a little booze in the honey beer in the honey.
Yes.
Because the elves got drunk.
Yes,
on
a little bit. Yes, you're right. Yes, the house elves do get drunk on butterbeer. That's true.
It's oh, like, poor it's like
poor
a
Winky.
Where
guys,
have we
poor
gone?
Winky. I feel Winky guys, done. Welcome back to Talkin' Winky.
Okay. Think of something that makes you crazy, right? You know, one of those things that could just be easily fixed, right? Where you're like, but why don't they do this? Why don't they just do this? Okay, maybe it's something big, like America's opioid crisis, all right? Or it's dumb, like, oh my God, how do I just get through this ad read done by Paul in the middle? How did this get made? Well, here's the deal. Wyatt Cenac is going to be exploring all problems, all right, from opioids to podcast ads in his brand new HBO series, Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas. It airs Fridays at 11:30 p.m. This is a great show. I love Wyatt, and he has a very laid-back style where he gets people to talk about these issues, and we get a greater understanding of them, why they may be a little bit more complicated to fix, or maybe why change hasn't happened in them. That's what's kind of fun about the show. He's going and asking the tough questions to the right people. So tune in live or stream it later. It's called Problem Areas for questionable solutions to unquestionable problems. And if you do have a fix for the opioid epidemic, that's a pretty big deal. So please, you should share that with somebody. You should maybe stop listening to the podcast and get someone in government on the phone. People, guess what? Determination, hustle, thrilling action, Rec League basketball, Pistol Shrimps Radio is back. What's Pistol Shrimps Radio? Oh, you don't know? Okay. Mark McConville and Matt Gourley from Super Ego and a million more great podcasts record live from the Los Angeles Women's Rec Basketball League. They call all the courtside action as it happens, whether they know anything about basketball or not. And let me tell you, they don't. They don't know anything about basketball. It's just like Mark and Matt. It's really funny. They make ridiculous and absurd color commentary and cheer on the Pistol Shrimps athletes like Aubrey Plaza, Stephanie Aileen, Maria Balsucci, and Amanda Lund. They're actually a pretty good team. It's one of the most thrilling almost sports events of the season with Earwolf's most ignorant sports announcers. So check out Pistol Shrimps Radio, Pistol Shrimps Radio, and your favorite podcast app or Apple Podcast, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. Check it out. I think you'll like it. It's very, very funny. By the way, just we were talking about who got top billing, or we were talking about the actors in this movie. Yes, Viola Davis attached herself first, but Emmy Rossum got top billing on this movie, and she's only in the film for 15 minutes. Like, so it's like Emmy Rossum, beautiful creature.
I feel like all the marketing was centered around her, and Jason brought up a good point of like who this movie is for. So like, right, ostensibly it's from teenagers, like it's a teen supernatural romance series, but then there are all these moments where like Alden Ehrenreich is calling Alice Englert a bitch for no reason.
He calls her a bitch so many times.
So many times.
I'm like, why have we accepted that calling women bitches is okay if they're like, kind of mean? No.
Well, doesn't that start when they're talking about whether or not she's called a witch or not?
Yeah, but and then he calls other girls bitches like five times.
Totally. He calls Zoe Deutsch a bitch. You know, it's like very, this movie I couldn't quite figure. I mean, obviously, it to me is like falls in line with we also did Vampire Academy. What was it called?
Vampire Academy. Yeah.
And it reminded me of that too. This is better than that, but worse than Twilight. I would
100%
in the continuum of those movies.
I will say this movie brought out my greatest fear, which is that this is the kind of movie I'd write. Like, because I feel like it tried so hard, and it was like, we're going to be like deep and serious, and we're going to deal with real tones. But like, it's funny. You know, like they were like, they saw Buffy and they were like,
sure,
they pulled it off, which they really fucking did.
Oh yeah.
But then it's like it's almost like they wrote a serious script and then went back and had a comedy person like punch up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's like, they just made a couple of choices along the way where you're like, they're almost like daring you. Like, cause I'm like, am I supposed to laugh at this? Or is this unintentionally funny? Or is this intentionally funny?
Right.
And I never quite knew.
And there's like making fun of how teens are. And then there's teens leading the movie. And it's like, you're supposed to be on their side. And I was like, what am I supposed to laugh at?
I don't know. And I wrote that down. I go, is this supposed to be funny? By the way, this is just a little thing. The lead actress in the movie, I'm forgetting her name right now.
Evan Rachel Wood. I still think she might have been in it.
She wrote the song during the snow scene. So
what?
Oh.
So the song is playing. That's her.
Whoa. That's the Australian. That's Lena.
That's Lena.
Yeah, okay.
She wrote this in her hotel room during pre-production.
And they were like, great, it's in the movie.
Wow.
It's in there.
I bet. So she seems cool.
Oh, she's like a director.
I wanted so much more for her.
She hasn't really acted since this movie. She's like a director and a writer and a thing. Like, I actually liked her a lot because I felt like she didn't look like a traditional, like, I don't know. I felt like I liked her character. I liked the way she played it. I don't know. I was all on board with
her. Why wasn't the story about her?
I don't know.
Yeah, I would have preferred. Yes, I agree. I would have preferred. She was certainly far more interesting than young Han Solo.
Yes.
In many ways. And that was, you know, and by the way, he's fine. You know, like, he's fine. They have perfectly fine chemistry. I think part of what's particularly frustrating about this movie is that it's a near miss. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it has all of the correct components. It's just you put them all together and you're like, oh, this doesn't work.
What you needed to do is get a director, I think, who said, this is interesting source material, but now I have to really distance myself from it and then make a compelling movie, which I think this
and
is
not
like,
cast all British people.
Wait, yeah, my Southerners. Brain just remembered something that you said earlier.
Oh.
Joss Whedon is doing Star Wars?
No, J.J. Abrams.
Yeah.
That's why I got confused.
I do wonder with this if people attached because of...
Are you okay?
I've been getting high this whole time.
Erin's just here when she's not on mic, just ripping bong hits.
hotboxing the Earwolf Studios.
By the way, I would just say one thing, too. The writer of this movie is no slouch. He wrote and directed it. He wrote The Fisher King.
Oh,
he
it's
wrote,
Richard the Gravenace.
Yeah. That's he what wrote, I was going to bring.
He's like an incredibly legit writer-director.
Bridges of Madison County, Behind the Candelabra.
Does his name necessitate all these actors attaching? Like, Emma Thompson, like, I want to work with this guy. Maybe.
By the way, there's one thing, one little connection I have with this guy. One of my first jobs in New York was doing test screenings for movies, and I did his movie Living Out Loud, which was like Danny
Katie
DeVito.
Katie Holmes?
Oh, is that maybe I'm wrong.
It doesn't matter.
No, Living Out Loud is Holly Hunter and Danny DeVito.
Yes,
it's like
that
a
one.
Middle-aged
yes.
romance.
Yeah, that one, yeah. I had to like interview people about that movie. It was not going well. Can I have you guys want to take a guess on what the tagline of this movie was? They're pretty amazing.
Oh.
So the tagline of the movie, Beautiful Creatures. Anyone any shot at all?
Don't call me a witch.
Mm.
Charles Bukowski is a god.
I won't put you on the spot if you don't have it.
Sometimes you have to claim who you are.
Oh, that's
I like
actually
that.
Good.
I like
this
that.
One is they're not as good as any of those. Casters and outcasters, there are more of us than you think.
What?
Oh my God.
Casters. Wait, that presumes that people know what casters are.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
That's terrible.
This one, is falling in love the beginning or the end?
Fine. That's a totally fine right? For a movie tagline.
And then this one is the one that is exceptionally weird. In Ethan Waite's hometown, there lies the darkest of secrets.
Oh God.
There is a girl. There is a curse. In the end, there is a grave.
I would
Ethan
argue.
Never saw it coming.
Jesus.
That's like a paragraph. Yeah,
that's a treatment.
There's so much. There's so much I want. Like, his dreams are never explained.
Yeah. Well,
never explained. I know it's her, but like, why is she appearing in his dreams with the hair obscuring her face?
Like, they're bound together by this, like,
by
civil
destiny.
War
destiny.
Yeah. I guess. I don't know.
I guess, but like, again, like, I feel like the movie put a bunch of potentially interesting stuff in play and then uses almost none of it. Like, the dreams are never kind of realized. You never have, like, satisfying closure or satisfying understanding of a lot of this stuff. I would also say, by the way, I think 40 to 60% of this movie takes place just walking on roads.
Yeah.
Almost every scene is them going and walking on a road, driving to a road, and then walking on it. Like, they are.
There's nothing in this town, not even a Starbucks, as he tells us in the opening.
Oh, my God.
Monologue. Yeah, I was thinking about that. I feel like this whole thing could be like a play on stage.
This movie, though unsuccessful, I think could have been a good movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it wouldn't have taken too much to make this a more interesting teen romance genre mashup.
It
you know,
a rewrite.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But I did.
Do you
love
think they
the
were
line.
Playing too much to Twilight, and that's what made it wrong? Or they were? I don't know where.
I
it
felt
was.
Like it was lazy.
Yeah.
You know what my biggest comparison point was True Blood. I was like,
oh,
this
yeah.
just feels like True Blood for teenagers.
Sure.
Like, they don't commit to like the sex and
the
violence.
Nudity yeah. stuff. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But like just the kind of like southern small town weird supernatural shit happening. But like we needed more of that.
Yeah, they just threw. It was kind of like, did you see that movie The Witch a couple years mm-hmm. ago? Everyone was so scared of it, and I was like, well, they're showing a bunch of scary images, much like every other horror movie you've seen, but there's no creepy backstory to give me chills and make me be like, oh, right. there's a deeper reason for all this. Like, this was that movie where you're like, yeah, we've seen all this.
Like I think that's why Conjuring is so good, because Conjuring, like, really walks you into something, and you're like, oh, I'm freaked out
by it. Well, also, like, guilty of being all tell, no show.
Yeah.
You know, like, this movie, like, the stakes of this movie are understood to us because they just keep telling us they're meaningful.
The exposition at the beginning was heavy.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot.
It's incredible.
Yeah. And again, it's like when you're not in yet, you're just like, okay, well, I'm settling down into this movie. You can't hit me with 2 minutes of exposition.
Especially after VO. Like,
yes.
We already got the VO, and then the kid's like, ever since Dad died, Mom's
really like, even when she explains the entire plot herself to him, like, she's like, all right, here's the deal. I'm a caster. I'm going to turn 16. Then it's called The Claiming, then The Light, then The Dark. And it's like, oh, okay. Yeah, like.
I loved when we jumped, when we got to The Claiming, and it's like her bat mitzvah.
Yeah.
Where she becomes. becomes a caster after, I don't know, reading from the Torah. And and Margot Martindale is there and is holding like a microphone. I was like, wait, so at the ceremony out in the wild, you know, under a harvest moon, you guys bring a microphone so you can talk to all the other casters?
And they were conveniently dressed just the same way the Civil War reenactors were.
Yes, oh, yeah. Exactly.
Same costumes for both rituals on the same day.
And nobody notices doing the Civil War reenactment that there's just like this coven that's taken over and like this girl is trans. She's like, don't worry about it. It's fine.
And then they save the, I mean, this is the other thing too. Like, you can do it in a movie like Logan Lucky where you don't reveal like a major part of the story until the end. But here it's like they reveal a major power that they can kind of just morph into whoever they please. Because that's like the big reveal is like you think young Han Solo is killed, but then you realize it was actually Jeremy Irons. But he was like being – But
then a lot of body switching.
A lot of body switching.
Which they never said they could do.
That's the thing. It's like they reveal like this thing. It's like, well, oh, okay.
But that's the thing. They've done such a bad job explaining the powers to us that like it's not earned when they use them in a surprising new way. You know, it's like, oh, well, I guess that's convenient that you can do that as well for this moment.
And now so in Logan Lucky, they don't reveal it's Wolverine until the end.
Yeah. That he's the Logan.
That's cool.
All right. I was literally going to make the exact same joke.
Well, obviously, we have opinions about this movie, but there are other people out there with a different opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
Second opinions. Ooh.
I'm talking about those.
Second opinions.
Oh, boy.
Ooh.
Let's talk about them.
These insane opinions may seem strange to you. Ooh, let's hear some second opinions from Paul, Jason, and you. Ooh.
And the actress who played Lena wrote that as well.
Yeah. Aaron, so stoned, loved that reggae song.
All right, so here are some second opinions. These are culled from Amazon. There are 1,241 reviews for this movie. 39% are five-star reviews. Here are a couple of them. Okay, our first review is from An Eye on the Prize. Good name. I had to see this movie twice before I made up my mind how much I liked it. I have read so many books that have been made into movies that I've stopped comparing books to movies. I now just watch the movie and decide if I like it or not. I love the Southern accents and the Southern regional things. It was somehow more pronounced in the movie than in the book. I didn't hear the Southern accents when I was reading the book. Some things were also simplified and streamlined for a general audience, and I'm okay with that. 5 stars.
Huh. Well, I feel like they really went on a whole journey about just how they feel about things in general.
Yeah.
Not hearing accents while you read the book is my favorite.
I like that, and I also just like that I had to watch it twice to decide how much I liked it.
And it turns out 5 stars is how much.
This one is from David Kameen. He goes, I had to give this a 5-star review. Some of the acting is really good. To be honest, some of it's pretty bad. It's one of those movies that drag you to look at your heart and what sacrifices you made in your life. Lots of people look back on their lives and wish they could change at least one thing. What matters is sacrifice, and this movie shows that sometimes sacrifice is a part of life.
Hmm.
5 stars.
Wow, heavy stuff.
Great movie if you think about it.
Do these people understand what 5 stars mean? Like, you can give it 4.
Nope.
It's 1 or 5.
This is the world we're living in.
Yeah.
This one, this is 5 stars. A fun watch for teens. Who am I? How do I get out of this place? How does one know what's gone on before me? I'm 15. 5 stars.
I mean, that was my high school experience.
Yeah, like they really captured it here. And then this is, oh man, there's so many. All right, I'll read this quick one and then I got a crazy one.
And then I gotta go.
A lot of people hate this.
You guys can finish
it. A lot of people hate this movie, but I enjoy it. If you're expecting Schindler's List, you're gonna be disappointed.
Wait,
that's what
five
I thought.
5 stars.
Of.
Yeah.
Like that.
Wrong war, sir. I expected the Civil War.
By the way, I don't think people are going in for everything to be like Schindler's List.
Well, that's how I approach every movie. This better be just like Schindler's List.
I'm just going to kind of pick and choose from this one from Ghibli Mitnick III, written on February 14th, 2013. And there's a lot of stuff about Valentine's Day because it was written on Valentine's Day. But Being a Generation Y teen who was raised in the entitlement era of the Obama administration and liberal ideology, Lena shows everyone when she decides to reject both sides. Instead of being a typical teenager today, selfish and self-centered without any respect for hard work, values, or merit, she simply has sex with every single male in the town of Gatlin.
She did.
And then she petitions the federal government to pay for her birth control, even though Sandra Fluke was there and probably wouldn't have given her access to Plan B. Maybe. In celebration of her efforts, Lena is given an award by NOW and Planned Parenthood, and she gets a high five from no other than Obama himself, who just happens to be on a tour of Kenya. The movie was so good it gave me goosebumps as I howled away in ecstasy and delight. 5 stars.
I'm so confused.
Whoa. So yeah. She gets a high five from Obama while he's in Kenya?
Yeah.
And this is how she interpreted the movie, or how she fantasized it should have been?
On Valentine's Day. And there's a lot of stuff about, like, it's on Valentine's Day, it's imperative that you see this movie. If you want to celebrate a holiday that's totally in favor of only women, the best way you can. This movie reminds us that all true love out there is possible and available at the price of a totally overpriced movie ticket. So you can celebrate the love you have for your significant other, which is only suggested to you by lingerie companies advertising Valentine's Day erotic wear.
This is a roller coaster.
Yeah,
Somebody is processing a lot. It's,
love Valentine's
Day. Oh, and then the last line is the best one. It goes, Valentine's Day, celebrate Valentine's Day by seeing a movie like Beautiful Creatures in order to pretend that Valentine's Day is anything but simply a contrived holiday invented by companies in order to market greeting cards, chocolates and flowers and teddy bears.
She's ripping off eternal sunshine.
Which women get as presents from men in exchange for intercourse.
Whoa!
Intercourse.
I've never had intercourse.
Wait, what are the things you have to give?
You have to give greeting cards, chocolates, flowers, and teddy bears, which women use to get presents from men in exchange for intercourse.
Wow. Siri, set reminder by chocolates, flowers, and greeting cards.
That's a lot.
Yeah, that poor person is troubled. Still five stars.
Great movie.
I have to say, I was at a screening Tuesday night after Monday night watching this, and apropos of nothing, the dude behind me starts talking about, you know what movie I really loved? Beautiful Creatures.
No!
Like a real film critic. I was just like, tell me more.
Do you think he meant Heavenly Creatures and slipped?
Or a couple of these five-star reviews are about Heavenly Creatures.
I bet.
Because when you
a lot
first,
of Rachel Weisz.
When you wrote, I was like, oh, I thought that was a good movie. And then I realized that,
I had to make sure that I told everybody, no, this one came out in 2013. Like, I even got it confused.
Yeah, sure.
No, it was this one. He started talking about Emmy Rossum.
Emmy Rossum disappears in the middle of this movie for an enormous amount of time.
And she comes in an hour into it. So yes.
I want to take this moment to reiterate how phenomenal Emma Thompson is.
Can we play her in church? Because this is a command performance. This is her good side.
Yeah, and we'll she's switching between these two characters. I thought this was wonderful.
Pull up the script. How about I do it?
Here is Emma Thompson in church as... Oh, the saddest part about this is like they take Emma Thompson out. She's like taking over the body of someone else, which is odd because no one else seems to have to take over a body.
Well, that character... Seraphim
is
Jeremy Irons' sister.
Right.
Okay. Also, she is...
Dark.
She's a dark caster who doesn't have corporeal form, I believe. So takes over other people's.
Why didn't she? Did we talk about... Did they say
that? Yeah, they try and explain it at one point, but it was very confusing.
She
lives on another plane because of darkness or blah, blah.
And that's where Jeremy Irons and her kind of fight in that dark plane. But then, at the end of the movie, it's a thrown away line. I rewound it to catch it because I saw it in subtitles. Because now I've watched movies the way you watch it. The boy's mother, he took over this, Emma Thompson takes over this, a friend of young Han Solo's mother. And at the end, he goes, can we go visit my mom in the sanitarium? Yes,
yeah.
So his mom is not recouped.
They ruined her.
She's ruined forever.
Broke her mind. And she's one of those people that, like, we're meant to believe, well, she got hers because she was, like, a puritanical Christian, you know, fundamentalist. So, jokes on you.
She's like a recent widow at the beginning of the movie. Yeah. Like,
jokes on you. You're now in a mental institution.
Well, take a listen to Emma Thompson. Here we go.
I'm not afraid of you or your evil kind. God, our creator, will condemn you to hellfire along with terrorists, atheists, homosexuals, Democrats, liberals, socialists, Greenpeace, and all the other unnatural abominations. Yeah.
My dear Mrs. Lincoln.
What?
If I were you, I would welcome any kind of fire. Might give you the opportunity to burn that unfortunate hat you're wearing.
Boom.
Slam. Now, there is stuff in here that I love from her. But it's also interesting to me that Margot Martindale, I feel like, showed up, was put through, I don't know, 3 hours of hair and makeup to give her that crazy wig and all that nonsense. And, like, basically was a background person.
Yeah.
Like, had almost no lines and was just wandering around.
Oh, I mean, well, the young boy.
She's a goddamn treasure.
And the other boy is at the table. I don't even know who he is, but he kind of comes in at the end.
Yeah, he's,
Oh, it's like, it's your brother. Yeah. And you're like, okay, I guess, sure. Yeah.
Just saw him at that revolving kitchen scene. By the way, this
that
is the
revolving
scene.
Revolving table.
And you know what?
It was practical.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but we never meet young Han Solo's father.
We never do.
No.
He never comes out of his room, correct?
He was asleep the entire time.
That's weird. Like, to set that up, you would assume at some point we will see him. Like, that will pay off somehow.
Do you feel like they cut those scenes and then in hindsight we're like, oh shit, we literally never revealed him?
Yeah, I don't
know. Because it's like there was no reason for that. Like, there was no payoff ever.
Yeah,
and
well, obviously, the
movie's so long anyway, you get the idea that it was just like, well, we had a 2:30 cut of this.
Is that storyline that, do you guys think that his mother became involved with Jeremy Irons and that's what killed her?
Yes, because Jeremy Irons says, I promised your mother.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they never explicitly
said that. I was like, this would have been so much more meaningful.
Yes.
If it turned out that Jeremy Irons sacrificed his life for the kid because he'd essentially killed
her. That is the story.
Yes. Yeah. But they didn't really.
No, not because
they were like, that's too Harry Potter.
Yeah. I don't know. I couldn't quite. There was so much at play that I was like, you have the stuff. Why aren't you using it well? It's all broad strokes in a way that is. It always kept me on the outside of the movie.
I feel like they crammed so much stuff in that there wasn't room to actually like have those moments or something like that.
It's like they had so many plot lines that they were like, but we'll cut the backstory of all of them and then just keep them all.
Well, and it gets back to, again, like even like if the movie were to be about the family of Casters, you know, as it kind of should have been, we would have understood more from the inside out what world they live in. But our point of view character is young Han Solo, who's always on the outside kind of trying to look in and never quite figuring it out. And the mysteries of his life are barely solved, you know? I'm assuming that was like a big part of the book. But
then the town that he's trying to get out of at the end, he's like, Lena! And he's back in.
One of the things I really liked.
What happened there?
This is one of the things
I really liked.
Her one eye changed.
Right, because like she's half dark, half light.
Yeah.
And then he flipped her. But we didn't even know that.
I really liked, I will say this, I loved that she mind wiped him.
Yes.
I thought that was like a perfect teen romance move to like have her like for the betterment of him or whatever wipe his mind so that he doesn't even remember her.
Especially
I love
coming
that.
Off that scene where she was like, I just want to have fun with you for the next few months. Like, let's just not think about it. And
totally.
So it's like they have the perfect day that's like a beginning, but it was the end.
Yeah.
Because she
I
knew.
Thought that was awesome. And that's like in that moment, in that little sequence, I was like, and then when Viola Davis is like, is Lena coming over for dinner or whatever? He goes, Lena who?
Yeah.
Lena Duquesne from school. And she's
that,
a freak.
And then that push in on Viola Davis.
I was like,
I feel like the tears.
I literally had an emotional reaction to that. I was like, this should have been the movie.
If this
movie made me care about these people as much as I do only right now, this movie would have been terrific.
Yeah.
You know, I believe,
but
and I'm
the
assuming.
The movie doesn't really get going into that last 15 minutes. Yeah. Like that last 15 minutes is by far the most engaging part of the entire film.
You gotta start in the middle.
Yeah.
Yep.
Start in the middle.
That's what you gotta do.
I will just quickly say this. This movie cost $60 million to make
in a tax credit
state.
Wow.
Its opening weekend was 7.5. It only made $19 million. In the top three movies of the year were The Hunger Games, Catching Fire, Iron Man 3, and Frozen. This movie didn't even make it into the list of the top movies, and it was beaten by films that we've done in this podcast, Fast and Furious 6, After Earth, Tyler Perry's Temptation. Those are all the ones that beat this movie.
Temptation Confessions of a Marriage Counselor
yes.
made more money than this movie?
Yes.
Oh, I'm surprised.
He's
that.
A huge.
I mean, I know he is, but I guess I assumed this was big, even though it was bad because of teen awareness.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
No,
oh,
okay. I only think I saw the poster. I'm like, oh, is that the poster for Dark Shadows? Or is that the poster for like another Viney
or like
kid
one of those
movie?
Mrs. Like that Peregrine's
yes.
particular
there's
children?
Such a deluge of just all of these kind of like light goth teen yeah. movies. You're like, what are we doing, guys? But,
before we wrap it up, would you recommend people to watch this movie in the way that we're watching the movie? Like, obviously not like, this is a great film, you have to see it. Is it worth like a night where you're gathering your friends? This is what some of our audience might do. I'm going to go out on a limb and say no. I don't think this is one of those movies.
Yeah, I didn't think it was bad enough to be good.
Yeah, yeah. it doesn't transcend, you know, into being something that is joyful to watch,
yes.
really. Yeah.
If it was half an hour shorter,
agree.
Then I think you could do it as like a fun hangout
agree.
Movie. Yeah. But it's 2 hours and 3 minutes. Like, what
I feel
are we
like,
doing? Yeah.
I agree with you. If you want like the better version of it, I guess watch Twilight, even though I think those are really turds.
I would watch a Twilight over this. Twilight to me was more compelling than this. Absolutely.
The bummer is like I'm so much more drawn to Lena's story in this movie than I am to Bella's story in Twilight, which I find to be borderline irresponsible.
Oh, it is yeah. irresponsible. It's awful, but Twilight pulls you in. It's like a music video the
totally.
Whole time. Like, I'm
yeah.
just like, I'm along for this, and I will be
yes.
emotionally
yes.
manipulated, even though I do not agree with what I am watching.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
then this, I was like, oh, I should be on board, but I'm going to pause this and steam some vegetables.
Yeah. yeah.
So
but I will
no,
say.
It took me like 2 viewings to yeah. watch this movie.
If you want to watch the fun version of this, then I would watch Vampire Academy,
yes.
which I believe also has Zoe Deutsch in it.
Yes. And so there you go.
Evan Rachel Wood, too?
No, Evan Rachel. I think, by the way, what you were saying, I think the girl who plays Lena played that character in the flashbacks.
I'm telling you, it was, I think it was the actress who plays the marvelous
Mrs.
Rachel Brosnahan is her name?
I think it was.
I'm looking right now.
That would blow my mind if that's the case.
I'm with Jason.
Yes, it is.
Oh, it
Rachel
is.
Brosnahan?
Yep. Genevieve
wow.
Catherine.
I wish she had made a better bet than it would blow your mind.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Consider my mind blown, though.
Yeah, I guess.
Boom.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, I will say, is one of the best shows on television in the last.
Loved it.
I loved yeah. every minute of it.
Very, very good.
Aaron, you and I, same page today.
Same page.
Aaron, what if you want to get other people on your same page, where can they find you? What can they do? What? Tell us where we can find
well,
you.
Speaking of pages, you would just open up your iPhone page to Twitter, at Girl With A Tail. Same thing for Instagram, at Girl With A Tail.
I love it.
Yeah.
Same deal. Find me on Twitter, at That Hagen Girl, THATHAGENGRRL, also on Instagram.
Oh, nice. Jason?
GRRL. That's the important part.
That's the important part.
Yeah.
People always miss it.
Yep.
What about you, Jason? What do you got?
I'm going to, I will plug once again The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which mm-hmm. I think is terrific. It's on Amazon, season 1 in its entirety. And then I would like to use this time to plug friend of the pod, Nicole Byer, is the host of one of the funniest shows I've ever seen called Nailed It
good?
On Netflix. Please do yourself a favor. Just start watching Nailed It on Netflix. Even if you start it and are like, oh, this isn't the kind of show I like, or I
yeah.
think I know what this is, blah, blah, blah. Just watch the first episode. It is so fucking funny. And Nicole is next level hilarious.
Oh, I cannot wait
Nailed
to watch
it. Nailed it on Netflix.
Well, I will quickly.
Ooh, also, yeah. there's a podcast called Cocaine and Rhinestones about country music.
Ooh.
That's
yes.
dynamite. If it is to country music, what you must remember this is to old Hollywood.
Ooh, I love that.
Kaboom.
By the way, just talking about a show that totally blew my mind in that same way was that new Queer Eye on Netflix.
Oh, yeah. my God.
It's the fucking best.
I had a dream I was on a date with all of them. It was like the best. I've never had a good dream, really. And I was like, I'm so proud of myself.
I've never had a good dream?
I dream in nightmares only.
That's why you have to go to bed as Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I love it. But that show, it if you watch the first 3 episodes, I mean, you'll get hooked
the
by
first one.
The first one. But the one with the cop, I'm like, what the fuck?
Really?
To me,
it's mind blowing.
First one and then the gay guy.
Oh, the gay guy's great.
Oh,
I love, yeah, there's so many good ones. But I'll also plug Disaster Artist is now on home video. Jason, June, and I are all in Disaster Artist, making of The Room. It's now available on Blu-ray and DVD or wherever you can get home video releases. There you go.
Well, and I'll go ahead and just plug that underrated movie Penelope I had nothing to do with. It came out in maybe 2010.
Great.
You're going to get some iTunes streams for it, I bet.
That's the end of the show, but it continues, that's right, on our mini episodes. Our mini episodes is where you get to voice your own opinions about these movies. You can write in on our message boards at earwolf.com or give me a call at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's 619-PAUL-ASK. Ask me anything about this movie. Bring up something about your life, your love. I will answer anything and everything. Just give me a call at 619-PAUL-ASK. Also, if you like the show and you want to represent it out in public, you want to get some merch, a hoodie, a t-shirt, a laptop case, you can do it. Just go to tpublic.com/stores/HDTGM. We have a bunch of great stuff there. There's always sales. I've gotten a ton of stickers there, from Miami Connection to Where's Rivka to Put Her in a Bra to a Jacob's Ladder scenario. We got all your specific niche How Did This Get Made references covered. A big thank you to everyone who makes this show happen. We could not do this show without Avril Halley pulling all of our amazing clips and watching these movies with us. July Diaz listening through and making sure this show sounds the best it can possibly be. Of course, our good friend, Nate Kiley, who does all of our research. Kelly Alto, who keeps this whole show together. All of the engineers at Earwolf. They are the best. Everybody at Earwolf. And, of course, Kevin Bartlett, who is a part of the team here as well. We have the best team in the biz. Give them a lot of love. Follow Earwolf on Twitter. And follow us on Twitter, too, and on Facebook. And you can follow me on Instagram. Sign up for our mailing list, which is at the top of our Twitter page and the top of our Facebook page. It's easy to find. You know how to find stuff online. And if you want to listen to some of our back episodes, I know there's only 50 free episodes right now. You can sign up for Stitcher Premium. That's right, Stitcher Premium. We have everything ad-free, even this episode you're listening to right now. So if you want to get rid of the ads, sign up for Stitcher Premium, and you can listen to a whole world of great stuff, comedy albums, exclusive podcasts, you name it, it's there. Even an exclusive episode of this show that you've never even heard. That's right. Holy shit. So with all that, I'll just say one more thing. Rate and review us. If you like us, rate and review us. It helps us on iTunes, and then we can like brag about it to our friends. It's a thing. It's an ego thing, really. We will see you next week for a mini episode where we will be telling you the next movie we're watching. So until next week, bye for now. All right, people, here's the deal. In life, there are problems that you don't know how to address, right? It can be overwhelming, it can be frustrating, but HBO's newest series grapples with just that. Comedian Wyatt Cenac wades through America's most complex and confusing issues to look for some answers, whether they're helpful or not. Wyatt Cenac's Problem Areas airs Fridays at 11:30 p.m. If you have plans Friday night, first of all, congratulations. But second of all, you can stream it anytime you want on HBO Go or HBO Now or anytime. Just tune in or stream Problem Areas for questionable solutions to unquestionable problems.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Chris Bannon, and Colin Anderson. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
This February, true legends from the worlds of comedy and music will unite to form the Supergroup. I'm Tawny Newsome. On every episode, me and my co-host, Alex Kleiner, will invite our talented friends to write and record an original song with us over the course of a week.
You'll hear every step of the process, from writing and rewriting to recording and mixing. Songs with Open Mike Eagle, Paul F. Tompkins, Ted Leo, Woo! Sashir Zameda, Janet Woo! Varney, and more.
The Supergroup. Join the band February 6th on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.